This is Sports Jam, and I'm Doug Doyle, and I'm glad to have a return guest to Sports Jam. It was back in 2013, the jazz trumpeter and executive director of the Jazz Forum Arts, Mark Morganelli, joined me at MSG, and we did a walk through all kinds of sites there, and he reminisced about the great sports events that he had been there. He's a long-distance runner for a long time, but what a great player and what a great producer he is. Mark Morganelli is back on Sports Jam. Great to see you, Mark.
Hey, Doug. Great to see you. Thanks for having me back.
It was in 2013 that we spoke about some of your greatest moments for you personally running and for moments in New York that you witnessed some great events. And we'll get into some of that. But, of course, a lot has happened since then, Mark. And right now, your club, the Jazz Forum Arts, have been dealing with a once-in-a-lifetime issue. And that happens to be COVID-19 and how the pandemic has cramped the life of musicians like yourself, the touring schedule, as well as the club venue. So there are some bright moments ahead, I know. So tell us about what you have planned and how it's impacted you so far.
Sure. Well, when the pandemic struck, we were supposed to be going to Italy. And of all places, I was supposed to play in that first week in March last year in Bergamo, Brescia, and Milan, which was the epicenter of the COVID outbreak in the world at that point, you know, when the 10 communities were shut down and there were, I think, 200 confirmed cases and no confirmed deaths in Italy at that point. So we canceled our trip naturally. And the good news is we have rescheduled it for next March. So it'll be almost 2 years, but we had to shut our Jazz Forum Club. March 8th was our last presentation here last year. So we've been closed a year and 3 weeks now. But thankfully, we're planning to reopen Memorial Day weekend this year. But that'll mean we will have been closed for 15 months, which is pretty, you know, mind-boggling. Similarly, last summer's concerts outdoors had to be canceled for the potential threat of infections and transmission of the virus.
So what kind of conversations have you had with your wife of 36 plus years, basically, Ellen? I imagine it's been tremendously difficult to think about planning and scheduling because so many things have been up in the air for so long.
Absolutely. Well, Ellen is the general manager of our Jazz Forum Club here. So she literally hires the staff and manages the staff. And we were going like gangbusters. We were selling out three or four sets on Friday and Saturday, right before the pandemic hit. In the winter, we were getting 400 or 500 people into our club in Tarrytown in the suburbs on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, eating, drinking, having a great time, communing with the musicians. The artists, of course, were just thrilled to be able to play. And, you know, that was normal. And now, you know, she's had to lay off the entire staff, except for our marketing team. And we've transitioned to doing everything online. We just celebrated last week 1 year of live streams on Facebook on Thursday nights, which we call Jazz Forum at Home, from artists' homes. That's sponsored by Montefiore. Thankfully, they stayed with us as a sponsor. You never know, you know, being a nonprofit, we need that sponsorship. WBGO knows better than anybody, you know. And so, you know, we also had to cancel the summer concerts, but plan on restarting them in July and August. And some of those series have gone 21 years in a row now.
So what have been some of the deeper conversations you've had between you and some other musicians about creativity during this time period and trying to take advantage of the streaming and the concerts online?
Well, we've done some really beautiful things online. Bob James has played two or three times for us, Monty Alexander, Donald Harrison from his place in New Orleans. It's been great that way, but there's nothing like live. And we're so excited to get back to that. And during the late spring and all through the summer to the early fall, we wound up with a Sunday afternoon informal jam session in front of the library in Hastings-on-Hudson. So that was a real treat. And that kept our sanity and our playing up. We now started here in the club 2 months ago. On Friday afternoons, we're doing a session with some musicians where we read charts by Hank Mobley and Wayne Shorter and Lee Morgan, Walter Bishop Jr. And that's been great. So those things have been wonderful. And I've been practicing every day more now than since I first came off the road with my band out of Bucknell University. So 77, 78, when I was playing about six, eight hours a day. Now I'm playing several hours a day and posting a different tune every day for 375 days now.
Now, how can he keep up that kind of a schedule? Well, if you remember from the 2013 episode, Mark has been a long distance, terrific runner for many, many years, from high school, being in track to Bucknell, and really making the New York and Boston marathons. He's been in the New York City Marathon three times with really respectable times. I can't even imagine running that long and that fast. And you're still in great shape. And that, obviously, we talked about the last time, is one of the great things about a musician, the physicality of running and to be able to play an instrument like you can.
The running definitely helps my air flow, especially on ballads and holding notes. It's been beneficial that way. And psychically, running is great. I often think of tunes and arrangements while I'm running. And I try to come back down and jot things down. If I think of, I should add this to the repertoire. Why don't I learn this tune and all of that? So it's good on a variety of levels.
One thing that's always been special about Mark Morganelli is that your music is international. And as we celebrate Jazz Appreciation Month, who better to talk to about jazz around the world than somebody who has celebrated Brazilian music so much? Tell us why jazz has been this universal, even though it's America's art form, it's been embraced by, different countries. And we see people all the time contributing to WBGO from around the world saying, "You're my jazz station."
Absolutely. I think a lot of it started with Louis Armstrong going abroad to Europe and State Department tours that were, sponsored by our government, where people went into the most remote regions of Africa and brought the music. But of course, the music, when I think of Voice of America, Willis Conover, putting the jazz music on the airwaves internationally back in the 30s and 40s really helped to engender the love of our music all over the world. And then musicians in each of these countries took it upon themselves to learn that music, having listened to it on the radio and then buying the 78s and then the LPs. And by the time we get into touring in the 50s and 60s, musicians from this country would go and find other, like-minded artists in these various regions and communicate with them. We couldn't even speak the language, but the same language of music.
Just had Carol Kay on WBGO, and she talked about, if you can play jazz, that's the music that singers want behind them. They want those type of artists behind them. Tell us about the magic of playing behind a vocalist or playing lead in a jazz group that may be different than other genres.
Well, I had the good fortune to play about a dozen gigs with Houston Person and the late Etta Jones. And I learned so much by just watching them interact, after their 30-year career together. They were telepathic. And I learned what not to play. It's just like Miles Davis, my main influence. The notes he leaves out, the spaces he creates, are just as important as the notes he does play. And so you learn as you go along and mature in this music that less is more.
You have a lot of people in music that you have idolized and had the chance to play with. we lost one of your sports idols since the last time we talked. Yeah. Not that long ago, we lost Tom Terrific. And in honor of that, we have Tom Seaver's jersey behind me here.
41.
You've been a huge Mets fan for a long time. How did the passing of Tom Seaver impact you?
Well, it was sad, you know, the way he went, you know, with a debilitating disease. And I wanted to meet him, and I wanted to really check out his winery in California, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I know it was award-winning, and I'm big on wines. Here at the Jazz Forum, we have Italian wines exclusively, and I grew up making wine with my grandfather in his basement in Queens. So I had hoped to meet Seaver and talk to him about wine and, you know, check him out that way. But, you know, maybe someday, because I used to play at Fred Wilpon's building. In fact, I think I saw Gary Walker there one day. But downstairs, I would play, and Rusty Staub came out of his restaurant to ask us to play softer.
Is that right? Wow. What a player Rusty was, too. And
fantastic.
You know, when we think about your love of music and your love of sports, they really coincide for basically your entire life. And you've been able to make this a real great connection for yourself. So we're going to talk about, you know, your running, and we're going to talk about some of the other sports moments now that COVID is on, hopefully on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
In your life, everybody has seemed to have, you know, there have been disadvantages, but now there are new advantages. What have you learned about being an arts producer, a jazz producer, that you can take with you and say, maybe I would have never figured this out had COVID not come around?
Well, you know, there's the old Jewish adage, you have nothing unless you have your health. And it's so true, because we've lost so many friends in the music and elsewhere. And, you know, it puts everything in a different perspective, what really matters. And I thought this more so after 9/11, where when 9/11 happened, I was like, we just play music. You know, these two buildings just came down and thousands of people died. I don't know if you remember when that happened, we thought the death toll was 10,000 or more. It turned out to be 3,000. But still, we had no idea for months afterwards the actual true toll that caused. But when that happened, it was so daunting to many of us. And Ellen and I were engaged at Windows on the World at the top there. So it had a lot of meaning for us, special meaning. But when that happens, it puts your life in perspective. And you think, okay, music is wonderful, art is wonderful, but living and breathing is a little more important. You know. So that's what I think, you know.
Another issue that's come about, Mark, there's so many racial incidents and so many problems that are they're going around, social justice matters. You're a person who has embraced all different types of communities. So just wanted to get your perspective on, it would be nice if we could all get along, but it just doesn't seem like it's happening right now.
Yeah, it's we're in a pretty dark place. Ellen and I have participated in Black Lives Matters rallies and locally here in Westchester, and she's gone to marches, and we've both gone to marches in Washington, D.C. for various issues, and we've always been very politically involved. We're in touch with our local and state legislators, and a person that I've gotten to know who's been here to the club just was elected as the first openly gay Black American from our district here, Mondaire Jones, who represents both the other side of the River Rockland and also Westchester. So it's been great, you know, and that all happened during this pandemic, that we got to meet him and hang out and go to some events, Black Lives Matter events. But, you know, I've been into women's issues, and, you know, we had 7 women in our college jazz band at Bucknell. You know, we had Blacks in our college jazz band at Bucknell. This is 45 years ago, you know, so I've been very attuned to these, concerns, ethnically, gender issues for many, many years. And I've always sought to present a wide palette of artists of all different, persuasions. and specialties. And that's to celebrate diversity is what it's all about. Variety is the spice.
And where did that start for you?
I guess growing up in Long Island, it was a pretty lily white neighborhood, you know, and I did have some Black friends in our high school, you know, and I got to meet people that way. But it really wasn't until I came to New York City and was living in Greenwich Village, and many of my friends and musician, other artists were Black, Asian, you know, gay. I could, you know, it just really colors your whole world and your outlook on life. And you see how we're all together. We're all humans. Gary Bartz, great alto player, I've had the fortune of working with, both producing his records and playing with him over time, says, you know, what about the human race? That's what this is about. We are the human race. These artificial divides are crazy.
We're speaking with jazz trumpeter and executive director of Jazz Form Arts, Mark Morganelli, here on Sports Jam. Take us back to the first time that you decided you wanted to run, and it was to lose weight.
I was in junior high school out in Long Island, and 145 pounds and 5 feet. And I back then, people wore Nehru's, the little Nehru, you know, jacket. I wore a Nehru shirt or whatever it was, and somebody referred to me as Mao Zedong. And I took that, I didn't take that too kindly. So I said, you know what, maybe I should lose some weight. So I went for the track team after trying football for 2 days. It took me about an hour to get the shoulder pads and everything on. And I went out there and it was hot as hell, you know, like hell week. And I was like, this is not for me. So I forgot that. And so I got onto the track team, and in eighth grade, I ran the relay. I didn't really want to even run. But they got me onto the 880 relay. So I had to run 220 yards. You know, that seemed like forever. And at the same time, I was doing the long jump, and which I had done in elementary school. I actually had the record in my elementary school for the long jump. And
you
then
know, you've had this athletic ability inside you for a long time.
I have. And so then I wound up putting the shot. I was a shot putter. In fact, I taught a guy, a classmate in high school, Russ Rano, and he wound up breaking the New York State record, 59 and a half feet with a 12-pound shot. And this guy was a big guy, but I taught him the O'Brien technique, which I had learned, and where you start backwards in the circle and then you shift. Because now the shot putters use that twirl around one and they eject the shot that way. But, you know, I've often gone to the Milrose games. In fact, I got my COVID shot at the Armory. We got our COVID shot. New York Presbyterian was giving the Pfizer out at the Armory at 168th Street. And I got in there, and it's an all-weather track now. When I ran track meets in high school, it was a floor. If you fell, you got splinters. You know, I used to run against Boys High, Power Memorial, Archbishop, you know, Malloy, Cardinal Hayes, all those like powerhouse New York teams. And, you know, it's funny. I used to run cross country at Van Cortlandt Park. We used to do the meet where it was like 400 kids, and the gun would go off and you'd all channel in 300 yards into this tiny little opening, a lot of elbowing.
It's a lot more physical than you think, right?
Yeah.
You ran three New York City marathons. We talked about your first time running the Boston Marathon back. It was at the time we talked, it was right when we had the bombings of the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, I did Boston in 74.
Yeah.
Running
has as you mentioned, is therapeutic for you as well. And you've been able to keep it up. Give us your daily. I know you recently suffered a little bit of a calf injury, but for the most part, you've been running on a regular basis.
I have. I logged in 1,000 miles last year and during the pandemic. So that's basically 20 miles a week. I run four times, but every once in a while I decide it's a beautiful day. I go long. I do 9 or 10. So, you know, I'm kind of in the back of my mind now that I'm 65. And then in that next age group, and when you go to these big races, I would like to do another half marathon. I had this thought that maybe I should try New York again at 65, but I'm not anywhere near that, in that kind of shape. But I know I could make a half, you know.
You're listening to Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is trumpeter, flugelhornist, producer, and the executive director of Jazz Forum Arts, Mark Morganelli. To compete, and compete in music as well. So that's, I'm sure that's what has made you, you know, the wonderful musician that you are, is because you're always trying to improve, get better, new ideas. Did that maybe come from your athletics, you know, that compete level?
Definitely related. It's funny because I remember being in high school and thinking about going to college, and, you know, I liked a variety of things. I liked Latin. I took 5 years of Latin, you know, and chemistry. I scored well on the chemistry achievement test, and I ultimately went to Bucknell as a chemistry major. But I remember people telling me, you can't do both. You can't run and play sports, you know, and, which is not true. And, you know, but those kinds of things get in your head. And I remember when I was already producing records for CDs for Candid and running Birdland when it was uptown on the Upper West Side, I presented Harry Sweets Edison with, you know, an all-star group, a Swing Summit that we recorded live for Candid. And he told me, you can't do both. You know, you can't be both a trumpet player and a producer. That was a different, you can't do both. And I said, yes, I can, and I do. And then a year later, I was recording in the studio with him and Clark Terry. You know, you asked about sports versus music, and it's like, for me, it's all part of the whole of life. You want to be a well-rounded individual. I love wine and food and travel and Italy and music and, you know, all these wonderful things, you know. And, you know, I'm a Knicks fan, I'm a Ranger fan. I like both the Giants and the Jets. That's an anomaly in New York. Most people are like very much into one or the other, but I like watching both. And, you know, I love running and love watching races on TV. I love watching the marathons on TV as well. And Doug, I have to thank you because you hooked me up with Marty Licori because he had done your show. And I wound up going to Florida 6 years ago or whatever, after the last time you had me on. And we gigged down there together in Gainesville, where he lives, by the University of Florida. And he picked me up in his Porsche and brought me to dinner at an Italian restaurant. And all I wanted to do was ask him about running. And all he wanted to do was ask me about jazz.
That's a great conversation. And that's the way, you know, the way it seems all the time, because I remember when on Sports Jam, we had the conversation between Jimmy Heath and Monty Irvin, and they both wanted to be each other, stars in each other's venue. So, you know, for you, you've played with so many greats. Who's out there now that you admire, that you would like to play with, that you haven't had a chance to play with?
Wow, that's a good question. I think Javon Jackson is a wonderful player, underrated. He's a great tenor player, played with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. I sat in once with Jimmy Cobb's band that featured Javon, so I know we had a nice hookup. So that would be somebody that I would like to play with. Oh boy, there's just so many people, like Russell Malone, I think is an amazing guitarist that I've never played with. Oh, actually, we did play, now that I mentioned, 25 years ago, we played a little on the QE2 to the Newport Jazz Festival. So, but I haven't played with him since then, you know, so that would be, he would be an interesting collaborator. And piano, someone that I've talked to a lot during the pandemic, who's played here, but we've never played together, is Monty Alexander. And I have a feeling that he and I would be simpatico.
Well, as you probably know, Monty was also a guest here on Sports Jam. His love of boxing is unbelievable. Yeah. As he described, I said, you remember the first time you and your dad went to a boxing match? And he went, oh, Doug, I was in Kingston, Jamaica, and Sugar Ray Robinson was on the canvas.
Yeah,
and the way he described it was like, this guy could write novels about boxing, and we'd all just sit next to our old radio sets and listen in and listen to him talk. Monty is unbelievable when he talks about boxing. Sports these days, you know, during the pandemic, we've seen the bubble, you know, experiment. We've seen that fans aren't involved. One thing that I found is that I didn't think I would miss fans as much as I did.
Yeah, I couldn't stand that canned applause and crowd noise when you're watching the game. It's, I know they want to do something, but it's so artificial. I enjoyed watching the, you know, 60-game shortened baseball season last year. At least they had something for us to watch. That was good. And it stayed pretty healthy, you know, overall. But I am so psyched. But they look good. Oh, my God. Watching DeGrom in spring training. The first inning, he's throwing 101. It's amazing.
The Mets, certainly. And I know you're one of those Mets fans that think, well, maybe this is the year that the team can go all the way. And if you think about it, the Mets have had the talent to be the number one team for several years now, and things just haven't worked out.
Lots of injuries. I mean, a ton of injuries. You know, it happens. But they are fun to watch. I watched, you know, a lot in spring training, and they wound up with a 500 record. I think they were 11-11 or something like that. But the Yankees only had like two more wins than they do. And they're both like stocked with talent, you know. But now the Mets have the new owner, right? Was it Steve Cohen? Is that the owner, right? And so he's got deep pockets. So, you know, hopefully if a position is lacking, they'll go out and get somebody, you know. Whereas before there was like, you know, the Wilpons were tied up with Madoff and, you know, get out the violins, you know.
So you have an opportunity to take a nice stroll, and everybody keeps the same pace, but you only get three people to run with you, and not family, but athletes, past or present.
Yeah.
You get a foursome just to take a nice jog together. Who's going to be those other three and why?
Bill Clinton, because I really respect him. I think he's a genius. I think he did very good things for this country, and I know he was a runner. I know when he moved up here to Westchester, he used to run in the Rockefeller Preserve, which is about 3 miles up from where I'm sitting right now. So he would be one. Marty Licori, whom I've met through you. And, you know, I think that he would be a great person to be in there. And I would probably say Meb Keflezighi.
Because you've also been on Sports Jam.
Yeah, I just really respect him. I think he is wonderful, been amazing for the sport.
Yeah, quite an ambassador. And
yeah,
you know, there's something about, I don't know what it is about long distance runners like yourself. Like you said, very reflective people who are very intelligent. I think people just think you get out there and you just run. You know, we have
a lot going through your head.
Yeah, we have no idea. You know, you can take a look at me. You know that I have not been a runner all my life. And during COVID,
I'm used to seeing you with a hockey jersey on, though.
That's true. And right behind me is a refrigerator. That's been one of my best friends during COVID, I unfortunately must say. But what is it about being a long distance runner? I know you talk about the mental aspect, but it really does seem to bring out a lot of really sharp people.
Yeah, I mean, when you're out there, there isn't a lot to do other than stop from falling. In fact, you know, running, I saw somebody mention or describe running as a controlled fall. When you think about it, it really is. You're leaning forward slightly, you're propelling your body, but you don't want to fall. So you want to just keep on moving in that front, you know, the direction forward. But you're out there, you have a lot of time to reflect on what's important in your life, what things you'd like to do. I think often about traveling. I think about Italy. I think about music. I think about my family. And though not religious per se, I am spiritual. So I actually pray on my runs. And that's been helpful in my life. And, you know, I'm not a big guy to like say, hey, let's go run together. I've trained, a buddy of mine and I trained when I was running the marathon, and we wound up running several half marathons together. Richard Bucas. Richie Bucas is a guitar player, vocalist, specialist in Brazilian music, teaches down at NYU. So we trained together, and it's a very individual sport, you know, and that's why I like, you're competing against yourself. And it's always PR, personal record, personal best. You're always trying to improve. But the thing is, as you age, it's almost impossible to improve your, you know, your times. So you set new goals, more realistic goals, and you try to achieve them. And so, you know, for me, it's been running these competitive races. You know, I've been back now 17. I took 30 years off to get into jazz after the Boston Marathon in 74. And so... I almost didn't run at all in 3 decades. And that's one of the reasons I can still run now, is because even though I had a diagnosis of a torn meniscus after the 2005 New York Marathon, I rehabbed it. But now my knees are still decent enough so that I can run long distance. But you got to listen to your body. And at the same time, you integrate that with your mind and your whole person out there.
So I'm going to have you do just that. I'm going to have you pick up your trumpet. I know it's always around you.
I even brought my flugelhorn out. How about that?
Very nice. And maybe you can create your own little marathon track for us on the flugelhorn, and what it would sound like if you are running it. Personal experience of running a marathon with Mark Morganelli here on Sports Jam. Miles Davis, and you can even hear the wall in that, Mark Morganelli.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's so funny when you could play something impressionistic, but there's a lot of, you know, pavement striking there. It's like 10,000 steps in a 5 or 6, you know, mile run out there. And so that, like, steps, and then when you're spacing and thinking, and I run along the Hudson River, so it's only natural. And then you come back and you got to, like, you know, run up the hill to my house. So you back on the steps.
And Miles Davis is, as you mentioned, your idol. And, you know, there have been many documentaries that we've seen a lot about these performers. And Miles have recently had a movie that, did you just eat up that information, or was it stuff you already knew, or did
a lot of stuff, a lot of new stuff I learned from that. It was a great, great documentary, great film. I really enjoyed that. And oh my God, some of the footage is amazing. And what's nice is a few years ago, I went into the film forum, and Ellen and I saw in that little theater there on Houston Street, right? The Elevator to the Gallows, the Louis Malle film, his first film on which Miles did the soundtrack. And that is still one of my most favorite recordings by Miles Davis. I think it was the same, within the same year as when he did Kind of Blue, 1959.
Miles shows up on the track with you just for one quick run. What are you asking him?
Where's your Ferrari?
I imagine he could probably keep up with you for a while, right?
So check this out. So our friend Ron Fried, person we grew up with out in Long Island, was the senior producer at the Dick Cavett Show. And so he says, "Hey, Mark and Ellen, you want to come down to the studio? We have Miles Davis and his group today." "Yeah, I think we can make time and come down." So we sit there at the end of the show. Well, he gives Miles a present. He opens it up. And for those of your listeners, and they may or may not know that Miles was hassled by the cops as being a black man driving a Ferrari or a Lamborghini in New York City. And was beat up by the cops, as a matter of fact, too. But so Dick Cavett gives him the present. He opens it up. It's a license plate that says, "I own it."
That's great. You've had the opportunity to play with and meet the greats of music and also great runners. You talked about Marty LaCoury, but Bill Rogers is also somebody that you had a chance to spend some time with as well.
Yes. In fact, I brought this book over here. This is Marathoning by Bill Rogers.
He is on his way to averaging a 4:56 mile average for 26 miles. Bill Rogers, 300 yards away from being the champion over one of the best marathon fields ever assembled in history.
While I was playing a regular gig up at the Castle in Tarrytown for 4.5 years with my band, Tony Jefferson, who has been my regular drummer and good friend for 20 years, is also a runner. And Tony said, "You got to read this book." This is when I was prepping for the marathon for 2005 New York. And so he gave me the book and I read it and I loved it. And I wound up running a 10K, the first 10K I ever ran in 2007. So it was like just after this, after my first marathon in New York. And who's warming up next to me, you know, like 20 yards away? Bill Rogers. So I go up to him and I start talking to him. And we were reminiscing about Boston because I ran it in 73, but dropped out at mile 15. I was only like 18 years old. And 19 the next year when I finished it in 74. So he writes, "Mark, Boston 73 and 74. I remember them well. Run forever. Bill Rogers, 07, Middletown, New York." So after he signed it, we ran the 10K. There were about 800 runners in the race. And I wound up doing a 40-minute, 35-second run for 6.2 miles with hills in Middletown. And I beat Bill Rogers by 9 minutes and Frank Shorter by 7 minutes. And, of course, they were like nine years older than me or whatever they were. 7, 8, 9 years older than me. And I was 40 seconds behind Joan Benoit Samuelson, who was just in front of me. And there was another gentleman who finished near where I finished. And I met him too, Ed Whitlock, who was the first American in his 70s to do a sub 3-hour marathon. All at one race in Middletown, New York at a 10K.
You get an idea just how good a runner Mark Morganelli was and continues to be. It was back in 2019 in June that, Brazil was your big project that you were working on. And I know that you mentioned to me before we started this interview that your son actually did the artwork for the album.
Yeah, I asked Jaron Ellen invited Jaron to do the artwork for my album. And I was like, uh-oh, what's going to happen? I was really, a little mixed about it. And then so I sent him a picture of Guanabara Bay and Ipanema Beach from the air, like the whole beautiful, the mountains and the sea, how lovely in Rio. And 2 months later, he sends me back something, a text on my phone. I was like, "Jaron, that's nice, but you just gave me back a picture." He says, "Dad, look, it's in oil." And I opened it up and I was like, "Oh my God, he did this painting in oil." It's nice. Just a fact, hold on. There
beautiful.
It is.
Beautiful.
That's the original piece.
Just so beautiful.
So it's called Brasil. The album is Brasil, like the Portuguese, Brazil! ! And it's we recorded it here 2.5 years ago, myself and all Brazilian musicians, 28 tracks by 10 different Brazilian composers, half vocals, half instrumentals. And I didn't sing at all.
Thank you. you have an idea what your next project will be. Will it be Brazilian music or not?
You know, I have all these things in my head of what I'd like to do. Eventually, I would like to do a tribute to Miles Davis. I've never done that. The American Popular Songbook is another thing. I would love to record an album of ballads with a string orchestra where I just do beautiful ballads, kind of like what Roy Hargrove did on his album, which I have, he signed to me. It's in the other room there. Something like that is very interesting to me. And then there are various duo projects. And also a follow-up to the Brazil album with some other Brazilian compositions that I haven't done, that I've been learning a lot of tunes during this whole time period, you know.
And I have one more project that you could do that I know you would love. If you called it something like Long Distance Running, and yeah, you had Marty LaCoury and others who have run with you who are musicians.
Yeah.
Those the only people allowed to play, those who have competed at a high level, you know, with running and marathons, that would be very interesting as well.
That would be. And you know who else is a big runner? Eric Alexander. I'm not sure if he's still doing it, but he's tough. He can really run fast. Yeah.
So as we wrap up this edition of Sports Jam, I want to go back to something that you had mentioned, your grandfather and making wine.
Yes.
What did you learn from your grandfather? Tell us a little bit about him, because for many of us, our grandfathers, you know, helped mold us, whether it be our fathers or grandfathers. What was it about your grandfather, and what did you call him?
I called him, I called him Gramps, Grandpa, because I had Gramps, my maternal grandfather, William A. Ferrante, who was born in Buenos Aires, of all places. His father went down there to make furniture and stuff, and then they came back to Italy and in here. But Giuseppe Nicola Morganella is my paternal grandfather. My father, Joe, everybody in my family, oh yeah, Joe. I find out, being in Italy on tour, a day off, we go and I find his birthplace, his birth certificate, and the house where he was born in Pago Vaiano near Benevento, outside of Napoli. And it was Giuseppe Nicola. He was born 1 de dicembre 1900, December 1st, 1900. And paciencia, patience, because when you make wine, it's with love. And we made it in like around Halloween and opened it around Easter. And then, of course, the longer it ages, the better it gets. So patience. And it's so much as long distance running. You can't, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. You take a measured pace and try to, you know, maintain that pace, and good things will happen.
And patience is what we have needed throughout this pandemic in order for all of us to get through and get on the other side safe and healthy. Mark Morganelli, it's been wonderful to reconnect with you again and to learn what you're doing now and how you've kept everything going quite nicely. And boy, congratulations also on keeping in shape, because it's not easy these days.
It's not, but thank you very much, Doug, and congratulations to you on 350 editions of Sports Jam.
I appreciate that, Mark. Have Absolutely. A great day.
You too.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the podcasts by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam. Find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes and on the NPR list of podcasts. Until our next Sports Jam session, hopefully I'll see you at the game.